You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
All right, we're probably going to start going here.
Well, I got to find the thing.
Oh, okay. Well, we don't have to do it right away.
Well, I just want to, okay, all right.
I'll start the show.
No, you won't.
No, whoa.
All right, I got it here. Okay.
Rob can't let Jason start the show.
Hello. Shut up. Hello and welcome to Building Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday. It's July 24th, 2017. You're listening to episode, guys. Okay, you ready for this? 269. It's a joke, right?
Oh.
My name's Rob. Jason's here too.
Just to be clear, that was terrible and still not in your top 10 worst openers ever.
Yeah.
Not even close. Might not even broke the top 20 then.
It's funny though.
Hey, but good news, it's not just us this time.
No, yeah.
You may have heard somebody laughing in the background on a phone that might be propped up on some game boxes pointed at a microphone.
I don't follow.
I wasn't actually laughing.
He's just coughing, clearing his throat.
Hi, Chris. This is Chris Kopak, our good buddy.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, always pleasure. Happy to.
Chris, we wanted to have you on tonight because we know you have something new you want to plug, a new product coming out. Right. Tell us all about it.
Exactly, yeah. I got nothing.
Aw. Yes, and, dude.
Don't feel bad. The first, 20 times you did that to me, I failed. Now I'm getting pretty good at it, but it took some time.
Well, I almost started to come up with a movie idea, but then that would have just gone downhill real quick.
In a world where
I have too many games,
one of those games suddenly becomes real. Star Wipe.
And it's totally not Jumanji.
It's not Jumanji? Oh, I was hoping it would be Jumanji.
No.
Oh, man.
It's a Zathura. Which was totally not Jumanji. It was just about space and a game that sent kids to space.
It was Zathura, a Jumanji film or Jumanji story or something like that. That was like its subtitle.
Was it?
Yeah. It is the sequel to Jumanji.
Well, except for now there's an actual sequel to Jumanji.
Well, now there's a remake of Jumanji.
That's a reboot of Jumanji.
Yeah.
I think it's a sequel.
Nope. It's a reboot.
No.
Really?
We're right. You're
wrong. Well, it's about a video game, so
yeah,
I know that much.
Right.
And there's guys playing girls and girls playing guys.
Yeah. You see, the thing that I think is cool about the Jumanji reboot is you know, the original, this is like a really old, like ancient magical board game, right? Or at least, you know, from like British colonial days or something, right?
Well, that's when all the magic happened.
Right. That's when all the magic was happening. Enchanted by, you know, African spirits or something.
Ewoks.
This is a video game console that looks like it was, you know, kind of from the 16-bit era, Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis, right? So it's, say, 30 years old. So a lot of ancient magic in that.
Wait, I thought you just were saying this is what you liked about it.
No, I was being sarcastic and pointing out the thing that's really stupid about it.
FYI,
Jumanji the board game is ranked 13,873rd on BGG right now.
That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, that sounds right.
I wonder where Jumanji the video game is rated in the App Store.
Uh-huh. Oh, you know what? I know that our other Chris Flory, our buddy Flip listens to the show, so in his honor, Jumanji.
Oh, Jumanji.
Jumanji.
Does he prefer that over Mario?
I don't know about that, but I know
he says Mario. So does Jason Tagmeier.
Okay.
No, it's Mario. It's not Mario. It's Mario. No, it's Mario.
Oh man, this is already off the rails because we're talking about Jumanji.
I'll take the heat for going off the rails.
It was your movie pitch.
Yeah,
my non-existent movie pitch.
So what have you, what you been playing lately?
That's a question.
Honestly, I haven't really had a chance to play much since Origins. I played a bunch of stuff while I was there. I think I got somewhere around 30 different plays.
Wow,
nice.
I wasn't planning on it, and it just kind of happened. But yes, since then I've only been able to get one to the table, Baron Park.
Yeah, how is that?
Everybody's talking about that.
It's really good. I really enjoy it. It's not crazy deep, and it's really accessible. you're basically, it's the whole Tetronomo kind of thing where you're trying to fit all your pieces onto your boards, and the strategy comes from covering up certain spaces on your board allows you to take tiles from the supply. And depending on which kind of icon you cover, you get some of the higher point value pieces. The base game itself is pretty light, but there's a set of achievement cards that come along with it, and then you can, for an advanced mode, you can shuffle those up and deal out three when you start the game. And it kind of gives you a little bit more tension as you have multiple people trying to go for the same goal and get it first kind of thing.
Okay. Right on.
How does it, have you played Patchwork before?
I've only played Patchwork in the iPhone app, not the physical.
And so to be fair, it's a pretty good port of the actual game. So I'm just curious, comparison wise, heavier, lighter, better, worse?
I would say probably about the same weight. Actually, Patchwork might be a little heavier now that I think about it, because you're getting more of the trade-off of the cost versus the time spent.
That can be tricky.
Yeah. I think I give Baron Park the nod because it can play up to four players, so it's not just a two-player only thing. I think it plays pretty well with two. I haven't played it with two. I've only played it with four.
Okay.
But.
Cool. Okay. I'm going to check that out. My wife and I are really big fans of Patchwork. So I would argue, too, that you could actually play a four-player Patchwork game just by putting two sets together and having a huge circle of pieces. I bet that would actually work. I feel like that's a game that they only made two-player because the component cost would have been ridiculous.
Possibly.
I mean, I could be wrong.
I still haven't played it, so I can't judge.
It's so good.
Yeah. I have the... I actually downloaded the app. It was free on Amazon Fire.
Oh, was it? Nice.
Yeah. So I actually have the app on my tablet, but I haven't actually fired it up yet.
You should play it. It's really clever.
Yeah.
So okay. I'll have to check out Baron Park, though.
Yeah, I recommend it.
So is that the biggest standout for you there?
I'm trying to think back. There was this booth that I had never seen before called Lion Rampant, and they're a Canadian publisher.
Yeah.
And they had a bunch of stuff that I had never heard of before. And one of the things they had was Vampire Queen, which is a little card game. It was a coupon in the Origins book that you could get 50% off up to six copies, and it was selling for $10, so you got it for $5, basically.
Oh, wow.
And it's you look at the cover, and it's like, I don't know about this one.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a Wolfgang Kramer card game. So it's like, okay, all right, now I'm interested now.
Sure.
And it's really cool. I'm glad I picked it up. It's got a little bit of similarity to a Bluxen in the sense that you're playing sets of cards down, but there are these Vampire Hunter cards, and when one of those hits the table, everybody needs to play their lowest single vampire, and whoever ends up playing the highest gets all the cards on the table. It's a shedding game. You're trying to get rid of all the cards in your hand.
Okay.
And at the end, any cards in your hand count as points, and you don't want to score points. And so you're trying to use the Vampire Hunter strategically because you don't want to hold on to them. They're worth negative 15 and negative 20 points, which big deal. Mm-hmm. The rest of the cards are all face value. But it was my surprise of Origins. I was really glad I picked it up on Jason Gitarski's recommendation.
Yeah, I saw him talking about it on Twitter, and I think a few other people after that I saw saying that it was a wonderful surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We ended up playing, it plays 3 to 12 players, and
oh, wow.
We played, I think, a 7-player game of it.
Nice.
It was very cool. It was really cool.
Sounds like it.
I'll have it and a previous version of it with me at Gen Con. I had to get the previous German version because it's the big A and little A, which is the big ass and little ass. And the card art is people whose faces look like butts.
Great.
So naturally I said, well, I have to have this.
Yeah, right.
So I'll have both versions with me.
Cool.
Nice.
Right on. Well, we should move on to our topic, I think.
Yeah, let's talk about a topic.
As I choke on nothing.
Let's topic a topic up in this topic.
Yeah. So
let's get topical.
Nope, that's not how that goes. So
I can't see it, but I'm shaking my head right now in dismay.
Right. Yeah.
It's okay. Rob was also doing it for you. So
right. And Jason was chair dancing. So
good.
Yeah. So Jason, this is your brilliant idea for a topic. So
yeah.
Explain.
Okay. So when I explained this to Chris, when I pitched for him to come on the show, I said, we spent a lot of time talking to designers about what designers like about games and why we design what we design. What if we talk to a player about what makes them love games, what they love about games, specifically what they hate about games, and really just all that sorts of stuff when it comes to board games. Chris, as he said, owns a lot of board games. He's played even more board games than he owns, and you know, honestly, it's just finding someone with that much experience in playing makes it easy to, you know, for us to ask a lot of questions about, hey, you know, what really stands out to you other than German games you can't get here.
Yeah, so. cards with numbers. That's my answer.
That's all you need is cards with numbers to make Chris happy. He's like, and show. All right. Yeah.
Yeah, you guys probably should have vetted your guests a little bit more.
So basically any game with cards with numbers. So I see. So you did get on Real Estate. Now I understand why. Cards with numbers. Done.
Yeah.
You should check out Spires.
No, I was kind of in the way. I didn't really need all that. But.
Perfect card game. Uno.
So apart from cards with numbers on them, what kind of game draws you in? What kind of game excites you?
Yeah, I said it a bit as a joke, but one of my things is cards with numbers, like Bluxen or Six Nymph or Tausch Rausch or Dicht Drawn, those kind of games. What draws me into those is the accessibility of them, because it's literally you have a hand of cards with numbers on it, and the amount of depth that the designer seemed to be able to get out of a deck of cards with numbers. Kind of along the same lines, I would have to put Las Vegas in there in terms of it's accessible.
Yeah.
But there's a lot going on, and it breeds good moments, you know, good fun moments when you get it on the table. Those are some of the things that the cards with numbers games also give me when I get those to the table. Cause I end up in a situation a lot where I have people around that I can try to get a game with, but they don't play often. So I need to get a quick hit in. And those kind of things that are small that I can carry with me and that, accessible but with some meat to them, those are always go-tos that I try to build up in my collection.
Okay. Yeah, so accessibility, easy to explain with a lot of depth in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, that's...
Oh, yeah.
And so what's funny about that is, I mean, I can't speak for all designers, but I know for you and I, like, that's the goal, right? To design game. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
the simplest game possible with enough depth.
Right.
That's easily accessible by anyone, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of the unicorn for everyone, right? Is that's what you want to design?
I would love to, yeah.
And it's hard to design that, right?
I think it's the greatest challenge that is there. Yeah. In a lot of ways.
Yeah, I don't know how guys like Kramer and Kiesling do it.
Yeah.
You know. It's you play one of their card games. It's like, wow, how do they come up with this idea?
Right.
And their games are pretty varied, correct? Like, it doesn't always, like, I can think of some designers, so I won't say, who are popular, who their games, a lot of their games were very, felt very much the same.
Kind of a one-trick pony.
Yeah. No, I've seen them design other stuff that I've heard is great, but, you know, it's a lot of the same type of game.
I mean, you kind of do what you're good at.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But I guess what I'm saying is, when it comes to, you know, Kramer and the others, do you feel like their games are really familiar, or it's like new game, like, oh, yep, okay, I can see that this is them, but it feels like a new game?
Yeah, no, I definitely see that there's a lot of, like with just Kramer himself, like he does El Grande and Princes of Florence, but also Six Nipped, you know?
Right.
So it's, you know, these bigger, heavier kind of games, but and also a game with cards and bullheads on it that I'll always have in my collection.
Yeah, so that's a good answer, but I understand what you mean about, you know, that you're feeling their style, but it's also different enough to where it doesn't feel like, hey, I designed the same game 27 times. Buy my game.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. You may have picked the wrong person for this, because I'm kind of an omnigamer, so, like, there's a lot of things that attract me to different games. Like, you know, I said the cards and numbers and kind of the lighter accessible stuff, but I'm a sucker for a good, you know, chunky Euro, too.
So, when you're thinking about a good chunky Euro, what draws you to that style of game? Because I'm guessing it's not accessibility.
No. I think what draws me to those is the choices that I'm presented with and the wide range of those choices. I guess I'd say it's kind of a love-hate relationship, where I hate the feeling after I've played a game where I go, oh, I was just starting to get where I thought I had my engine working, and if I only had like three more turns or two more rounds, or, you know, there was so much I wanted to do, but I didn't have, you know, enough time to do it. I both love and hate that feeling, because it makes me want to play the game again, and it makes me want to, you know, it draws me in, but it also frustrates me at the same time. So it's this, you know, it's a weird kind of thing, but
that's good. That's a feeling I think we've all had at one point or another.
Oh, sure.
I think that's why, I don't know for Rob, but I think that's one of the reasons why I struggle with longer games, because I do. I'm like, I got my engine. This is great. This is fun. I'm finally having a great time with this game. It's done and I lost. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And kind of a curse for having all of these games that I own and trying to be kind of the teacher of all, I kind of suck at games. Like, I am not very good at them.
Yeah, neither am I.
But, and I don't spend the brain power to, like, really distill the game down to its, you know, to its core math and its core, you know, mechanisms, to kind of like get into the game's head. You know, I enjoy being able to stay at, you know, the slightly blissfully ignorant level, where I don't have to worry about, well, if I do this, then I'll have 5.5% chance of getting what I need, whereas this will give me 7% or whatever. I just like that, oh, I get to take this cool building and maybe I can do something cool with it later. And
right.
Later
yeah.
comes and I may not actually be able to. But it's those kind of games that I think it makes me feel like I have a chance to get good at them maybe sometime.
Right.
But I can still do okay at them in the short term.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds a lot like kind of my own philosophy or my own kind of attitude when I approach a game, that I'm mainly playing this game because I like to have fun doing stuff with friends or family. And I'm going to try and win, and it'd be cool if I do win, but if I don't win, I kind of don't care because I feel like I've already won because I'm spending time with friends or family. And so I don't really care about I don't spend a lot of time working on strategies or thinking about optimization. I'm not a min-maxer, right? That's not who I am. That's not how I play games. It's just not how my brain approaches stuff like that. And I'm pretty darn good at Saloon Tycoon now, but that's because I've played it so much.
Well, then you literally know all the tricks because you designed it.
Well, I know most of the tricks.
That's
true. I wouldn't even say there's really any tricks in the game, but whatever.
You know the strategies,
yeah.
Different strategies. And so if you see an opponent start to employ something, you'd be like, oh, right. Okay, they're going for this. I'll do this.
But the games that I find myself playing many, many times over are games like Las Vegas and Tausch Rausch. I played twice just this past 4th of July with family. You know, those sorts of games that I keep coming back to, and Outlawed, for example, are games where, you know, it's hard to have a real clear winning strategy in those cases. You know, a really good player in those games will play well and will do well most of the time. But somebody who's just, you know, kind of being goofy or just taking a crazy opportunity when it pops up is also going to do okay.
Could still win.
Yeah.
For sure.
Right. And so I kind of like that lightweight attitude of those.
I would agree on that front.
Yeah. Okay.
That's good. So a couple other questions I had for you. The first one is, so what does theme mean to you? Like, you know, a lot of these games you're playing, the theme is non-existent, right? And for Euros, we all know that the theme many times is boring to the boringest, right? Because it's the mechanics that are supposed to draw you in, not the theme. So how much does theme matter to you?
I would say that I don't put a ton of significance on theme. But on the other hand, I appreciate and enjoy a well-tuned theme and mechanics and a good pairing. But the theme of something, it's not going to necessarily make or break it for me, and it's not going to be like the thing that draws me in necessarily. It's definitely going to be more of, well, how does it play? What's fun about it? What is the experience at the table with other people playing it? That to me is more important than the theme necessarily. I you know, going through my collection there, I have themes across the board, you know, like NASCAR style racing or a bear park or, you know, chocolate farming to camel racing, you know, all these different things. And all of them, it was more how the game played and what people were able to do at the table in them that drew me in more than, oh, that's a cool game about making bear parks. I like bears. I'll get that. Mm-hmm.
So my next question would be then, I'm Chris Kopak. I'm wandering around the hall at Gen Con, right? Are you the guy that shows up with a really distinct plan of what you're going to buy?
I generally do try to have... I go in at the start with a pretty solid idea of what I'm going to look for. Because I'll have gone through the BGG list and I'll have watched videos and I'll have done some research and I've, you know, looked at the rules and tried to get a sense of what that game is, and then I'll be kind of laser focused on getting those things first. But then the other side of me, if you see me on Saturday or Sunday, I'll be like, this looks kind of cool, I'll buy it.
I know the feeling. And so when I'm the opposite, I'm mostly impulse buy unless somebody's like, this is a really good game, you should find it. And that's usually Jason Katarski, like you said before, he's really good about sharing, oh, this game is good, go get this game, with people in general. So if you're wandering around the hall, what makes something catch your eye? Because for me, being somebody who's really concerned about theme and art and stuff like that, that's what gets my attention, right? So if you are buying a game that you haven't heard about before, what's going to make you stop and look at it?
Huh. Yeah, that's a good question. I tend to try to go off the beaten path as much as I can, you know, and I'll avoid, you know, the bigger name stuff, and I'll just, I don't know. That's a really tough question to answer. I just kind of trust my gut based on what I can see. Like, I don't know.
Well, that actually makes a ton of sense though, Chris, because you've played so many games and you know what you like. So when you see something, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, this could be, you know, this could be my type of style. So I was just curious because, you know, being some,
I think if it's something that's out on a demo table that I can see the components and see what's in it, or if I can kind of hover around a demo going on and kind of watch what people are doing in it, that will kind of play a part. But if it's just like it's not out there for display, or I can't get a good feel for what it is, I'll generally just kind of move on. I think I'm making some pretty knee-jerk kind of decisions when I'm doing a roaming like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's Gen Con.
Right?
It's part of
Gen
the show.
Gen Con is about the impulse buy, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think you have one more question, Jason?
I did. Yeah. No, I can't remember what it was.
Okay.
I was like, oh, this is a good question. Oh, this is it. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Okay.
This is a little taboo of a question here.
Uh-oh.
So we're getting interesting here. You don't have to name names. In fact, you probably shouldn't. But when it comes to, you know, the impulse buy, or, you know, you go with your gut on something, how often, in all the games you have and all the games you played, how often do you tweak rules slightly with house rules?
I'm trying to think. I don't think I ever do that. I think I always play to the heart of the game and the way it was designed. And that may mean that it might not get played as often.
Fair enough.
Something like that, that is a common house rule kind of thing. I generally don't try to do a lot of house ruling.
That's,
I mean, to me, I understand where people can come from for wanting to do that, because ultimately you want to have fun playing the game. And if there's something that's preventing you from having that fun that you can tweak, then, you know, I say go for it. But on the flip side, I think about all the time that the designers put into getting the rules to where they are, that I kind of give them the benefit of the doubt that they've kind of thought of these things, and that's just not the game that they wanted to make necessarily.
Yeah, right.
And I don't know. I think it's more a situation of that maybe that game isn't necessarily for me. If there's like a house rule that would make it, you know, air quotes, better for me.
Right. No, that's fair. That is not an answer I would expect from a game designer, because we're like, I can make this better. It's a great answer though.
Yeah.
I think it goes back to how I'm not in the mindset of trying to, you know, break down the game to its core math, and, you know, I just go in for the experience mostly, and I enjoy how the game is being presented to me by the rules as put forth by the designer. And like I said, if that sometimes that really works and sometimes it doesn't work as well, but then I don't fault the game or the designer in that case. It's just, it didn't connect with me at the same level that something else might have.
Cool. That's sure. totally fair.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like the house rule either, unless I've played the game a bunch, right?
What I've experienced before is there's like, you're playing a game and you're like, I love this game except for this one little thing.
Mm-hmm.
This one little thing I don't like. Let's not do that little thing, right? Sometimes it's as simple as leaving a couple cards out of a game or something like that. I was just curious. Honestly, I don't house rule a lot of games either. There's a few prominent ones we do, but really it wasn't... It was what we were really doing was, I like the way this game plays, but I need it to play this way for this group, so let's do that. But Chris, you also have lots more games than I do, so you have a lot more options than I do.
Yeah.
And you've played your games more than I've played mine, because I'm not always the best about playing all my games consistently, so...
I'm not either. Like, a good vast majority of my games have been played once or twice.
Fair enough.
So it's... But I guess that kind of plays into it, too. It's like I have enough experience with a lot of the stuff in my collection that I can generally get a pretty good sense. Like, if I know the people I'm going to be with, then I have a pretty good sense of what I might bring along. Or if I don't get a good sense, then I'll bring things that are, like, you know, my standards. Like, you know, Call Back to the Cards with Numbers or Las Vegas or something.
Like, right, right, oh, right, yeah.
I know I can get that to work with pretty much anybody. So I don't necessarily branch out too far unless it's somebody that I really know well, and then I'll get a sense of, okay, well, I know that they're not really cool with, like, a deck-building kind of game because they feel like it's just, you know, multiplayer solitaire kind of thing.
But, yeah, right.
So I wouldn't try to bring something like that and say, well, we can do this different because I know you don't like that part of it. I would just find something else that they would enjoy better.
Sure.
Cool.
Well, so we're running short on time. We need to pitch a game.
We do. So here's the plan. Rob and I are going to try and pitch a game that Chris would like. Mm-hmm. And right now I'm hearing Cards with Numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Theme doesn't actually matter.
But I think we still need Chris to give us a theme.
I don't know. I think to challenge ourselves, because here's the thing. Designing on the fly, theme makes it way easier, right?
It does, yeah.
But not having a theme isn't bad, right?
No,
I'll say this. Let's have a theme, but the theme doesn't have to be tightly ingrained with the mechanics.
All right, great. I like that. Okay, so give us a theme.
Okay, let's go with.
Okay, go. Go. Theme. Go.
You're making it harder to think, Rob. He's unbearable, I know.
I'm just going to keep pausing and to just drive you guys nuts.
Yeah, thanks.
let's go with... Sorry, I'm blanking here. Let's go with books in the library.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's a great,
like,
theme.
Okay. So the first thing that pops in my head is Dewey Decimal System.
Me
right?
too.
Yeah, but it can't be that complicated, of course.
Right.
So I think we're categorizing books by number, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So is every card is a book?
So every card is a book, and maybe the board is shelves.
Yep.
And maybe at the start of the game, you have you deal out a set number of cards that tell you what should go on each shelf.
Okay.
What type of book should go on each shelf?
Okay.
Okay. It doesn't necessarily have to be themed books. It could be like large books, medium books, small books, or maybe that's just how it's built.
Well, I think what matters is the number on the book.
Oh, okay, okay,
yeah,
okay.
Right. And maybe each player has a specific shelf, and that's how we keep track of who's doing what and who's accomplishing what for points. So...
Ooh.
Oh.
Sixes can be nines.
Sixes can be nines. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Just turn the book upside down.
Right.
Yeah.
So for your scoring, say you're trying to get them in an order, kind of like a run of books.
Okay.
The six and the nine can be interchanged.
So you're trying to get a set of books arranged on your shelf that are in a proper order, for example. You are going to score based on the set that you can create. But you want to make sure that, but you're not going to get points for anything that's duplicated on another shelf.
Oh, because you want to have like a your own unique
your own
stack.
Set, right? And if the same book is on multiple shelves, or the same category book is on multiple shelves, that means those books aren't together, right?
Right.
That means the shelves are messed up.
Exactly.
Okay. So we need to say what are the numbers? Are they like 1 through 10? Are we 1 through 12? Maybe 1 through 16.
1 through 13.
1 through 13. That's why 13.
Because 13, it's unlucky.
Okay.
They say.
Some people say. Okay. There have to be some other kinds of like wild card books or something also.
Could you do fives and twos? Is there a way to spin that book to make it or?
Yeah, I mean, you turn a two upside down and it's still a two. If you're looking at it on digital,
you have
display,
to turn it upside down and turn
it. You have to mirror it. Yeah.
Yeah. So no. Okay. Okay.
So the sixes and nines are good. I mean, eight's the same either way. There could be just special cards, special books or something that allow you to swap things.
Ooh, what about this? Since it goes up to 13, what if you have a 1 and a 3 next to each other,
uh-huh,
it could be read as 13?
Oh, okay.
So like 0 could go at the beginning, mm-hmm, or it could go with 1-0 for 10.
Hmm.
In fact, maybe there aren't 10s, 11s, 12s, and 13s, right?
Maybe it's just 1 through 9 or 0 through 9?
0 through 9, and you organize it however you choose.
Hmm.
And maybe at the end of the game, you get the point values.
So if a card's on its own, then it's worth face value. But if you stack it, you know, like overlap two cards, then instead of it being a 1 and a 1, you overlap those two, then it's an 11.
So, and you can go all the way to 19 then.
Okay.
But at the end of the game,
that makes one super valuable.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
So, because maybe only 13. Maybe you can only go to 13. I mean, heck, that still makes 13
one
valuable.
It still makes ones really valuable.
But it's also only worth one, right? So here's what I was thinking.
Okay.
The end of the game, your score, and this should be a fast game. This should be a 10 to 15 minute game.
Oh, right? Yeah, definitely.
At the end of the game, your score is based on the number of points you have, but there's a multiplier based on the number of books you have. Or maybe there's a positive addition to that score of, mm-hmm, X number of books. So even though I'm going to get a 13 by putting in a 1 and a 3 together, I'm still not getting as good of points as I could, maybe, depending, mm-hmm, on my situation, right? By having multiple books.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
I think I'm with you.
So like when I put two books together, now it's one book, it's not two books.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm, in the end, if there's a multiplier system, having that second book would help, right?
Yeah, I think I would also like different colors, you know, green, red, and blue book covers.
Uh-huh.
And that combining similar colors would be great. And that provides an alternate scoring option.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
Because it's important not only that the numbers be in the right order, but that the shelves look nice. Because, I mean, honestly, in my house, the shelves need to look nice. It doesn't really matter where the books are. What matters is that the shelves look nice.
Right. Well, and you also, too, like, pairing up a book of two different colors would not be good.
Okay, the wild cards can be little tchotchkes that you put on the shelf in between the books. Because
Yes!
It's not in, like a public library. It's your home library.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so you need little tchotchkes, like a clock or a little clown statue or something.
Right.
Okay.
And maybe if you really wanted to go with, if it was less about just the raw numbers, I mean, the numbers could not be used for scoring. The numbers could just be used to dictate order, right? You have to build in order, right?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, yeah, so if the points don't matter, then sure, ones are very valuable, so you just put more ones in the deck, right?
Sure.
But getting 1 through 10 is just as good as getting 11 through 20, right? It's just the color matching. And then the tchotchkes could actually blend, right? The tchotchkes could have some base colors on them. And if those colors are represented in the books adjacent to them, right, mm-hmm, then that would flow and count as bonus points. Does that make sense?
I'm not sure I'm following 100%. But
let's say you have a little clown guy. He's blue on one side and red on the other, right?
Okay.
So you get a blue book on the blue side and a red book on the red side. That's going to count as a
transition
bonus to your score.
That'll be,
yeah,
continue a combo of some,
right,
kind.
Okay. And you
can
easily do things that would be dual colored like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That'd be easy. Okay. Okay.
So, Chris, where are we at? What do you think?
I'm liking it. I'm liking where you guys are going with it.
Okay.
I was actually toying around with an idea that popped into my head when you brought up the Dewey Decimal System.
Okay.
So I don't know if you would mind if I made a pitch.
Do it.
Yeah, do it.
Please.
So with the Dewey Decimal System, I was thinking the books would have a 3-digit code on them. And the deck of cards would be kind of a pyramid-style deck. So there would be a lot of zeros, you know, a bunch of ones all the way up to not as many nines. So it would be heavier weighted towards the zeros and ones. And you are you're trying to build out your shelf, and you are trying to build them out in order, Dewey Decimal number wise. So you're always playing down three cards as a book.
Oh.
And what you're trying to do is you're trying to get as much of a singular sequence or singular run of books of 3-digit numbers for each book as you can, and the best most concurrent set of 3-digit numbers gets the most points, kind of thing.
Okay.
So could you play anywhere on the shelf then? Because you're trying to slot cards in, like, oh, this is 999, I should put it down at the bottom.
Wait, you're just playing on your own shelf, right?
Yeah. Everybody has their own shelves they're playing on, and I'm undecided on whether or not you can shelf a book in between two other ones already there, or you just have to make the best that you can
in order
with what you've already got on your shelf. Or maybe everybody gets three cards dealt to them to start their shelf, and then they can go on either side of it, left or right, and they're trying to play as close to... okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe they're trying to play as close to their starting book as they can, and then the difference is... the difference between one book and the book next to it is kind of the point value for that book. So if you start off with like 3, 4, 5 as the starting book in your shelf, and you put down a 4, 5, 6, then that's too much math. Now thinking about it.
So you're basically 110 books apart.
But I get what you're saying. You're saying the farther apart, the better for scoring, but the harder to play the next one. Because if you push yourself too high, then you're going to...
Yeah, I was actually thinking the farther apart, the worse it would be, because you're trying to get these books ordered.
Right. The lower score, the better you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe it's you're trying to get as close as you can, and there's an array of number cards from the deck that you're basically like making kind of a Tausch Rausch kind of swap kind of thing.
Okay.
So you're putting cards down from your hand to pick up other cards, or you're playing a book down in your shelf, and maybe it's whoever plays five books first or something like that.
Uh-huh.
So there's a little bit of a race to it, because if somebody starts playing down books and you don't get, you know, all five of your books down in time, maybe there's a penalty for not having a full shelf or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think I like your game better than ours.
I do too.
Good work.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. Cool.
Awesome.
I don't know, just that Dewey Decimal System, when you threw that out, I was like, oh, multiple digits.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's neat, because generally you're just playing one card at a time on things, so this adds that layer of creating a set before you commit yourself to something.
It's like you're making a run of sets, kind of.
Right.
I like
that. All the same number.
And you're going to pick where your set starts.
Yeah, either that or you just randomly dealt three cards and then...
Oh, yeah.
Maybe you're dealt three cards, but no zeros or ones to start off, so that everybody's kind of... nobody gets stuck at the low end.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Sure.
I get 0, 0, 0. Yes!
Yeah. That sucks. I only have one side to play on.
Yeah. Huh.
No, that is not bad at all. I like yours better than ours, for sure. Hey, look at this. You came on the show. You pitched a game, even.
Look at you.
Sorry, guys.
It's okay. We appreciate it, I guess.
Such a jerk.
All right. Well, so we're short on time here, Chris. Is there anything you want to plug? I mean, that's generally what people do. I don't know if you want to plug anything.
I'm just a guy who plays games, so I don't have anything to plug.
Okay.
But people could find you on Twitter.
They can, right?
Yeah, I'm at the Kopac, COPAC.
There you go. Okay. So at the Kopac on Twitter.
Find him at conventions.
Find him.
Yeah. He is there.
If you're walking around a convention and you just yell out Kopac, I will probably hear it and I'll find you.
Or someone who knows you will go, oh, he's over there.
Yeah.
True story.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, cool. Well, thanks for hanging out with us, man.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
lots of fun.
Yeah. And builders, thanks everybody for listening. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. On Twitter, we are at podcastbtg. Jason is at J.A. Slingerland. I'm at Proly_design. You can like us on the Facebooks and give us the 5-star reviews and podcast places. You can call our Google Voice number at 770-TEL-BTG. Our website is buildingthegamepodcast.com. On there, you can buy a water balloon washout. If you go to thegamecrafter.com, you can buy a copy of the Rumpelbum Academy for bug-based baking. You can buy Finish It, the outrageous storytelling party game, or you can buy 8 Arms to Hold You. If you go on to Amazon.com, you can buy a copy of Saloon Tycoon for your very own. And if you go to GrandGamersGuild.net, you can get yourself a copy of Unreal Estate.
.com. Yeah.
You can get yourself a copy of Unreal Estate. Is that on Amazon yet?
I don't think so.
No?
I think it's just
okay.
On, yeah.
That's fair. You can come back next week when we're going to do this again, I guess.
Every week.
Every week. Thanks again, Chris.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, we'll see you.
Good night, everybody.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
If I hang up on you, I'm really sorry.
No worries.
Literally, none of these symbols look like symbols. That looks like sound. Okay, I think that worked, yeah.
That was sound. You muted cool. yourself.
Oh,
can you hear us now?
Can you hear me? Oh my gosh, what the...
Yeah, you muted your mic.
Can you hear me now? Hello? I don't think
fix it, Jason, fix it.
I didn't hit the mute button though.
Still nothing.
Hello?
Okay, now your video's gone.
We're still here, we promise.
Look at these symbols. These symbols don't make sense. That's speaker. No, I don't want earpiece. I want speaker.
We're still here.
Maybe.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yep.
Yay!
Hey.
Wow, this is the worst thing ever.
Okay.
Wait, where's the sound coming out of? Hey, Chris, talk for a second.
Hi, this is Chris. I'm talking for a second so that you can find where the sound is coming out.
There it is. Okay. I don't know why I thought the sound was coming out of the other side.
Well, it usually does, doesn't it?
I have it on
Whatever.
Speaker. It's because I have it on speaker.
iPhones are stupid.
You have one.
I know. It's stupid.
That's why he knows.
So, I got to get rid of this pop screen for today. Is that okay? I'll just stay back here. Is that all right?
Yeah, just don't.
Just.
Yeah, don't.
None of that?
Don't
okay.
pee into the microphone, okay?
Don't.
No, don't do that.
Welcome to our microphone. Notice there's no pee in it.
Ah, it's funny.